Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So the bickering over the debt ceiling, I don't have to tell you, as has devolved to almost absurd levels of political posturing. We'll talk later in the show, by the way, to one of our local House members, Republican Nan Haworth from Mount Kisco and Points North. And both Republicans and the Obama administration are trying to position themselves to use this latest battle as a talking point come the 2012 elections. But when it comes to campaigning on the economy, President Obama is sure to also tout many of the programs that he has put in place to help stem the recession and stimulate growth. So with an early eye towards 2012 and a keen eye towards the still struggling economy, and many of you caught in it, we continue our one-by-one look at various Obama economic stimulus programs. We're calling the series Did It Work? And our guide each Wednesday in July is Robin Farzad, senior writer at Bloomberg Businessweek. Robin, welcome back. Wednesdays are my new favorite day of the week.
Aw, shucks. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. Today's topic. Here is President Obama from May 20th, 2009.
The Helping Families Save Their Homes Act advances the goals of our existing housing plan by providing assistance to responsible homeowners and preventing avoidable foreclosures. You know, last summer, Congress passed the Hope for Homeowners Act to help families who found themselves underwater as a result of declining home values, families who owed more on their mortgages than their homes are worth. But too many administrative and technical hurdles made it very difficult to navigate, and most borrowers didn't even bother to try. And this bill removes those hurdles, getting folks into sustainable and affordable mortgages, and more importantly, keeping them in their homes.
President Obama, in May of 2009, as he was just in office a few months at that time, the financial crisis was still shocking everybody. The recession certainly was officially in swing. And now before we evaluate how much of that, of the president's program achieved, of those goals, you wrote a piece, Robin, for Bloomberg Businessweek 2 days ago evaluating the overall foreclosure picture in the United States. How's it looking now?
It just got me so depressed. I think I want to hibernate. I just want to go into a cave and you know, sleep for 10 years. Look, it's a lot worse than anybody expected. And the gist of the analysis here is that 5 million people were prematurely and incorrectly made homeowners by this housing bubble. And the market is now in a wrenching process of evicting them. And to a certain extent, you have the Obama administration and many in Washington and Fannie and Freddie now on the taxpayer hook trying to stave off what other people are arguing is just a market inevitability.
And listeners, if you have taken advantage of government mortgage assistance, give us a call. Tell us how easy it was, what kind of difference it made, or if you have tried and found that you weren't qualified or the bureaucracy was too dense or whatever, call up and tell us your experience with any of these foreclosure prevention programs initiated by the Obama administration. 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692 for Robin Farzad in our Did It Work series every Wednesday this July. And Robin, here's our back of the envelope list of features and affiliate programs as part of the Obama efforts. He mentioned some of them in that clip. The Hope for Homeowners Act, the Helping Families Save Their Homes Act. These are at least plain English. The Fraud Enforcement and Recovery Act. That's got to be a good thing. The Making Home Affordable Program. And my favorite, and this is the biggest, but this is my favorite bad acronym, HAMP, for the Home Affordable Modification Plan. Who talks like that?
It reminds me of this this Brazilian assistant I used to work with 10 years ago, and I wouldn't correct her, but she's like, Robin, I have bad news. I don't mean to put a hamper on things.
Yes.
And that's the situation.
I live in a home affordable. I mean, you know, maybe in French you say it that way, but it's the Home Affordable Modification Plan.
TARP, TALF, I mean, it's consistent with those. I mean, this was designed to prevent foreclosures with exploding payments. The problem is that it's not just, these subprime toxic securities that are made out there. The majority of defaults are now in prime, supposedly quality mortgages. 1 in 4 residential mortgages is underwater. And so people are grappling with negative equity. And they're deciding, at what point do I just mail in the keys? Do I FedEx it back to the bank?
So our question is, did it work? Here is one very opinionated and to the point take from the TARP watchdog, Neil Barofsky, at a hearing this March.
The Home Affordable Modification Program has to date been a failure. To the extent that there is good news, it is that it will not cost the taxpayer anywhere close to the allocated amounts. But of course, that distinction really bears that any type of claim of success for the remarkably modest numbers of modifications that are coming from the program, you know, don't match up with what was originally intended. And the advantage of not having any real goals, real meaningful goals or benchmarks, is you can claim success wherever you want and say, hey, that's a success.
All right. That's TARP watchdog Neil Barofsky. He has since left that job and I believe is teaching at NYU. But is that too blanket a statement? Is he being political there or is he being absolutely factually accurate, or what would you say?
He's being brutally, soberly honest. I mean, this has only succeeded, quote, in quote, air quotes, for lowering payments for a little more than 500,000 borrowers, maybe 600,000 borrowers. And in the meantime, there are 4 million borrowers who are in foreclosure who've missed 3 or more months of mortgage payments. And the problem here is this has several moving parts in it. You're asking Treasury and Tim Geithner would love the banks to take a haircut on principal. It's like, we're all in this together. You're going to lose if these guys foreclose. The taxpayers are going to lose because a lot of this stuff will recourse back to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which are now in government conservatorship and have cost the taxpayer $140 billion. So all of us have to get together and in a collective of interest.
But the banks don't buy that formula. They think it's better for them to actually foreclose on these homes and own homes that might be very difficult to sell at anything more than the same kind of downgraded mortgage rate that they would have negotiated.
It's not just that the banks don't buy it. Fannie and Freddie aren't participating in this mortgage modification program. And that's where you get into the very sensitive area of industrial policy. Now that the government is holding their nose and does have Fannie and Freddie in conservatorship, could you use them as arms of industrial policy to extend loans to people who are unemployed? Should we, as a matter of moral hazard, transferring wealth from the banks to homeowners maybe who got a little tipsy during the housing bubble? Is that fair? Is that kind of helping people who really should not have taken mortgages in the first place?
Let's hear some people's experiences. Joe in Litchfield County in Connecticut, you're on WNYC. Hey, Joe.
How you doing? I have an extensive amount of personal experience with this home modification programs through the government. I fell behind on my own mortgage from a house that I bought in 2007. And I bought a home that was much less than what I technically could qualify for. I didn't overbuy by any means. But after a downsizing my company went through in 2009 and my new job paying me about 75% of what I had been making, I was fortunate enough to be working at all. I fell behind by a couple of months this year on my mortgage at the same time that my property value dropped by about $80,000 from what I had paid for the house. And the bank absolutely gave me, every month when I spoke to them, gave me a different answer about what program I did qualify for or could qualify for or whatever relief they may be able to give me. And when I spoke to them about reducing, because my house is only, $200,000 or so, no interest rate reduction was really going to make any meaningful difference in my payment. But when I spoke to them about reducing the principal because the property value had plummeted, mm-hmm. they wanted nothing to do with that, wanted nothing at all to do with that.
Did they say why?
Yes, because they said we won't lower your principal. We'll sell it to someone else for the lower amount, but we won't refinance it to you for the same amount.
Joe, I'm going to leave it there so we have time to get some other people on. But is that an emblematic story, Robin?
Absolutely. Look, this is a witch's brew of unemployment and an unprecedented housing crisis. The worst case scenario for any homeowner who's in debt is to have to not only give the house back in short sale or foreclosure, but also write a check to the bank for in excess of what the home is worth. If you can only sell it for $200,000 and took out a mortgage for $400,000, that's real money out of your pocket. And this speaks to some of the conundrum for the administration is how do we, unemployment and housing are kind of competing for the most corrosive elements of this economy right now. Is there a cure-all that can address both in one shot? Certainly they're trying to tie Fannie and Freddie and FHLA policy to helping people who are unemployed. But Again, does this stave off the inevitable, especially if you're already in negative equity? Step back from this for a minute, Brian. Companies, private equity firms that with very cold eyes invest in commercial property, they have strategic defaults all the time. If, you know, XYZ buyout shop took out this much debt in order to build a mixed-use Manhattan development that looked great in 2006 terms, and if it's bad now, they can default on that, and it doesn't mean that the whole company goes bankrupt. Unfortunately, that doesn't apply to homeowners. There seems to be a moral stigma of doing the right thing by your bank, so there's an asymmetry.
Matt in Chelsea, you're on WNYC. Hello, Matt.
Hi, good morning. Well, first of all, the modification program went well for us. The value, we're underwater about 25% on the mortgage, and we were, in turn, our mortgage payment was dropped about 25%, so that was the good news. Bad news is that the lenders have already sold my mortgage to two other lenders, so I've been through three different lenders now. They take my mortgage, send it to somebody else. The problem with it is, well, there's a couple problems. One is that the fees, every time a lender takes over the mortgage, they charge you about half of one payment of a mortgage for fees that you have to pay right away, or that impacts your credit. Secondly, there is they have different practices that that each of them have that you're not aware of, so you have to get up to speed on a new lender's rules. And also, some of them have different kind of payment schemes. So it's just a general problem is just around lenders selling the mortgage to other lenders and having to deal with that.
Matt, thank you. Interesting insight. And obviously, Robin, you can't look at this program in a vacuum. So here's a stat that places it in some economic context. In December of last year, 60% of the borrowers who received permanent HAMP modifications were facing a loss of income. Just 11% were the result of unaffordable mortgages. In other words, it's not just that mortgage rates were too high to begin with, or too many people who couldn't really afford their homes were put in them, but that they are becoming unaffordable as the economy continues to struggle and individuals are losing their jobs. So how much then is a program like this effective if people simply aren't going back to work and earning money to pay down a mortgage anyway?
You know, sociologists in the housing industry used to always say that the last thing, the absolute last thing you would do is send the keys back to the bank. I mean, you would cut everything else. You would go private label. You would, you know, you wouldn't eat out anymore. And I think that's changed so much in that people actually had an expectation of being able to tap the equity in their home when they made these purchases. That you remember we used to call housing kind of the ATM machine. You could refinance and take out cash. And not only is that gone now, but you're underwater and you're below debt. So I think the two are inextricably linked. I mean, Fannie and Freddie do their own surveys, and people, you know, point blank say, no, it's unemployment. I can't afford to do this. But that's inextricably linked to what they're on the hook for every month.
By the way, want to take a guess as to what the first hit is that comes up when you do a Google News search for foreclosure this morning?
Fannie Mae?
R. Kelly.
Oh, boy.
Reportedly facing foreclosure on mansion. According to Crain's Business Chicago, singer R. Kelly is facing a $2.9 million foreclosure lawsuit on his suburban Chicago mansion over claims that he has failed to make mortgage payments on the home since June 2010.
We got to get him in front of HAMP, like right now.
You think he's eligible?
I'm sure he is.
So it's not just Joe the plumber. And one last thing. I want to briefly revisit last week's conversation in which we discussed the Small Business Lending Fund, a pile of money the Obama administration was sending to small banks in order to help fund loans to small businesses and startups. We said this money was not actually being distributed. And lo and behold, the very day after our conversation, we received a press release from the Treasury which said they're doling out $123 million. So can you and I take full credit for this development?
You and I can. And in fact, remember, we were going to launch a kosher Persian food truck. So they owe us at least a few million for that.
Absolutely, for our coming startup. And quickly before you go, the home ownership rate in the United States is 67%. Home ownership rate in France is just 55%. And what I want to know from you, because I know you're savvy on so many areas of life, what does this indicate about who is going to win the huge Women's World Cup matchup between the United States and France, which starts in 2 minutes?
Let me tell you something. About soccer, very typically for me, I'd rather watch paint drying on a tree sloth. But we had such an incredible, riveting win over the Brazilians, which is so unthinkable in soccer. And who could not root for the United States to stick it to the French in any way? So go USA.
Instead of chanting USA, USA, they're going to chant Abby Wambach, Abby Wambach. Being dry. You don't like a nothing-nothing game with a shootout of penalty kicks?
Soccer's always going to be the next big thing this year, but it's like Esperanto, Brian.
Robin Farzad will continue our series, Did It Work?, about the economic recovery programs next week.